Jacob's calling the MR.
McCallick with the Ventura County Sheriff's Office.
How are you doing, sir?
Sorry about that. I had another phone call I had to grab real quick.
No problem.
Stop. My understanding is that you and your crew will be working tomorrow. Is that correct?
Which crew are you referring to?
The crew that
is possible
officer-involved shooting.
Oh, out in Santa Paula.
Yeah.
I can tell you that I won't. I actually got deployed out to Victorville, so I'm sitting on an ambulance out here in San Bernardino County. As far as 100% sure, I can put you in charge there, in touch with a on-duty 24-hour supervisor, though, and they might be able to get you some better information.
Okay,
do you guys need some information or anything like that?
I just wanted to sit down and interview everybody, and I thought I understood that they were back to work. I did get a hold of... I did get an interview with him over the phone. And been able to get a hold of.
Okay.
I just figured I might show it. It might be more convenient for them if I just talk to them at work.
Okay, great.
But since you're not going to be available, I'm going to be out of town for training for 2 weeks starting Monday.
Holy smokes.
I just did a quick interview over the phone real quick.
Yeah, that's not a problem with me. The only caveat being I'm on duty, so if I end up getting snagged for a call, I'll have to call you back.
That's absolutely
fine.
Basically, if you could just let me know how the start of your shift went, and then how the call for service came into you, what you recall from the dispatch to you guys, and then your response, what you saw and did when you got there. Anything else that might be relevant to the investigation?
Absolutely. So, and if I start talking too fast, please tell me to stop if you need to catch up or anything. But
just so you know, I am going to be recording the conversation so that I can type up an interview.
That makes it a lot better.
So.
Excellent. So I was on duty. I'm the supervisor for that area. And typically what will happen is if the ambulance in that area goes out for a call, then I kind of become first up to go out and help because there's no paramedics on the fire department there.
Okay.
So I got toned out. I was asleep at the time and went ahead and responded. I got toned. They told me it was a gunshot over the radio.
Okay.
And when I got down there, I arrived. I believe the engine, it's out of station 82. I'm not sure if they're driving engine 82 or engine 181 that day.
Okay.
But essentially, I got right behind the fire engine. They turned on the street before I did. And then that was Palm, and then we both turned onto Ventura together.
Okay.
And I parked behind them. At the time that we pulled up, I noticed that there was a Santa Paula cruiser that seemed to kind of be blocking the road.
Okay.
So we ended up parking a good distance back from the scene of the call. And the cruiser that we stopped behind, I believe, was like a Dodge Charger. And we saw that there was a Santa Paula PD SUV, probably 50 yards, if that, maybe 20 or 30 yards ahead of where the cruiser was.
Okay.
And the ambulance that was for that area actually got canceled right before or right after I got dispatched. They weren't very far behind me when it came to getting on scene. However, I was first on for paramedics, and I grabbed my gear and I started walking on the driver's side of the engine towards the scene. As soon as I got to about the cab, I noticed that there was the Santa Paula PD SUV parked up a good distance ahead of us, and there was the patient was lying on the ground at the back.
Okay.
And so we went ahead and approached, and as I, you know, was approaching, I was trying to be very conscious of where things were on the ground so that I didn't move any evidence or or step in anything that was going to be tracked around the scene.
Do you recall things in the road or things that you needed?
There were.
Okay.
I always kind of do a quick, visual assessment, and the things that I noticed were, I noticed that there was, looked like a kitchen knife or a butcher's knife, a larger kitchen knife on the passenger side of the Santa Paula SUV.
Okay.
And it was behind the vehicle, but it was on that side of the vehicle.
Okay.
And then I also noticed back towards the engine a bit, so it would have been away from that that SUV. On the same side, I noticed a set of handcuffs, black.
Okay.
And it looked like a small pocket knife that was open.
Okay.
And those items both had blood on them. So I noticed those items sitting over there.
Okay.
And then from there, I kind of, you know, after I kind of, you know, did my visual assessments, make sure there weren't any, like, unsecured firearms or anything like that, I made my way to the patient. From my first impression, he looked like he was deceased.
Okay.
You know, he'd lost color in his face, and he wasn't moving, and his eyes were slightly open. He didn't appear to be breathing. So
okay.
I set my equipment down, and again, I set it down so that it wasn't setting it on any evidence.
Right.
And I felt his pulse, and he wasn't breathing. At that time, I noticed that it looked like a gunshot to the abdomen, and then I noticed there was quite a bit of blood on his face and also a lot of blood on his shirt, so I assumed there had been another gunshot somewhere underneath his shirt.
Okay.
And so we began our assessment. I had our fire department go ahead and start putting him on our cardiac monitor, and there was an officer there. It wasn't, I'm trying to remember who it was. I believe it was Officer Huerta was there.
Okay.
And so I asked him, you know, how many shots had been fired, and he said, no, I'm really not sure at this time. And I didn't ask what caliber it was, but I noticed that, you know, the gunshot, you know, he had, I believe once we ended up moving his shirt up, it seemed like he had two or three. I can't remember without looking at my report.
Okay.
But at any rate, you know, we put him on our cardiac monitor, and I began assessing him physically, the patient physically. I moved his shirt up and noticed another gunshot right above where his heart would be.
Okay.
Over towards his left-hand side a little bit.
All right.
And so at that time, our ambulance showed up, and I gave kind of a quick rundown of where we were. We started talking about how far we were away from our trauma center, just because our policy kind of dictates where we would have to go.
Right.
At that time, the monitor hadn't been 100% hooked up yet. But once it was, we determined that the patient was in, it's called a pulseless electrical activity. So it's essentially when there's still electrical activity in the heart, but it's not causing any contractions.
Okay.
So his heart was stopped, and it was at such a rate that we determined that we weren't going to be transporting him, and we pronounced him. When I say we, I should say dead at that time.
Okay.
So from there, so that we could get a clearer understanding of the trauma that was involved, decided to move the patient's shirt just so we could get a better look.
Right.
And the gunshot hole that we noticed in the shirt was to the left-hand portion. So we went ahead and cut that shirt, and we cut it up the right seam and over through the right arm so that we weren't cutting through any bullet holes.
Right.
And below that, he had a wife beater. And the wife beater was loose enough that we were able to get it over the patient's head without having to cut it.
Okay.
So we moved that up and observed, you know, the remaining gunshot or gunshots. I'd have to refer to my record to see whether it was two or three that we noted.
Okay.
And we saw those. And then we also noticed there's quite a bit of blood on the face. And it didn't appear to me, I couldn't see any injury that would have kind of accounted for that. So I started looking. He had not a thick beard, but he had a beard.
Okay.
And it was kind of matted with blood. So we looked real quick to see if he had had any slash wounds or gunshot wounds to the face or neck, and I didn't see any, but I didn't want to manipulate his head or move him around too much since we'd already pronounced him, and I knew it would be turning into a investigated crime scene, so we didn't manipulate his head too much. I didn't note any other injuries though on his head.
Okay.
And from that point, once we determined death, we started getting, you know, we started backing away from the medical aspect and paying a lot more attention to exiting the scene without, moving anything around or, you know, damaging any evidence.
Sure.
And so we gather our equipment and we start moving back towards our vehicles. And at that time, I noticed that there was a trail of blood that seemed to be moving. I think it was the north side of Ventura Street. And the trail went pretty much from what I saw, it went near where the SUV for Santa Paula PD was, and it went all the way back up to Palm.
Okay.
And which was the route that we had to walk to get back to our equipment, you know, our vehicles anyway. So we're kind of walking that route.
Do you recall?
I want to say it was in the street.
Okay.
But you know, if I remember correctly, I think there was some that came up onto the sidewalk at Ventura and Palm, but I distinctly remember that there was a trail of blood in the street. And I remember it because it was a copious amount of blood. You know, it wasn't a couple drops here and there. It seemed like somebody had been bleeding and walking you know, and it's a significant distance from Palm and Ventura back to where the SUV was. So I noted that stuck out in my mind that somebody had to have been, you know, bleeding a significant, you know, at a significant rate to create that much blood on the street.
Let me ask you this. Did you notice any injuries on the subject who had been shot that could account for somebody bleeding like that?
Again, I noticed that he had a copious amount of blood on his face and his neck area. And to me, it didn't seem like... So, for instance, if he had been shot in rat... And that was kind of why I asked, you know, Officer Huerta how many shots had been fired. When he kind of gave me the impression that he wasn't 100% sure, I kind of stopped my line of questioning. But in my experience, if somebody is shot, like, several times in rapid succession, and especially if one of those gunshots, you know, stops somebody's heart, then it's not really... You know, it wouldn't have really produced the amount of blood in the area I found it. That's why I checked his head and neck, because I didn't know if, you know, and I saw these knives on scene, and I was thinking to myself, you know, well, nobody's telling me that an officer has been stabbed or shot. If there's blood on a knife, you know, perhaps this person, and this is highly speculative, but, you know, perhaps this person hurt themselves or something like that before this incident began.
Okay.
And so to answer simply, I didn't see an injury to his head or neck that I could see through his beard, but he did have a copious amount of blood that, you know, had come out. So
do you recall,
he could have bled that much.
Do you recall checking any other extremities, legs or arms or hands or anything like that?
He was wearing a T-shirt, and I didn't note, you know, at the time any sort of lacerations to his arms or hands or any, you know, thing around there.
Okay.
So, you know, I didn't, and that's why we checked his neck. You know, to me, I was like, well, it didn't look like he cut his wrist, but he, you know, maybe he cut near his throat, and that was, you know, kind of on the left side of his face and neck. But I didn't see any bleeding from his waist down. I didn't cut his pants off, but I didn't notice any sort of, like, you know, blood spots on his pants or shoes or anything like that.
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah.
And
from there, we just essentially, you know, at that point, sheriff's deputies were showing up, and more law enforcement from Santa Paul was showing up. So the crews began cleaning the equipment to back of the ambulance. Officer Huerta asked us if we could stick around, you know, kind of until they figured out where, you know, if they needed any more information from us. And so we exchanged cards, and, you know, a short time later, I double-checked with Officer Huerta, and he said that they had our information, wouldn't need us anymore. So at that point, the fire and ambulance resources all cleared and returned to service.
Okay. And then do you remember seeing anybody else there besides law enforcement? Any witnesses?
No. I remember when I pulled up on scene, you know, it was fairly early on a Sunday morning.
Sure.
And I remember that it seemed appropriate for that time of day. You know, there wasn't a lot of activity on the street. As more and more resources started showing up, people started kind of coming out of their apartments, which is kind of typical for that neighborhood in my experience.
Okay.
And then as the scene, you know, as the incident developed, we were approached by three or four people who were blocked in by all of our vehicles and wanted us to move or help them so that they could get out. One guy needed to make a flight. I think somebody else was trying to go to church. But at any rate, we started getting approached, and this was probably a good 20 minutes into the incident. We started getting approached by people who wanted us to move our vehicles so that they could get out.
Right.
But that was further down towards Palm, and I didn't see anybody who, like, ran up to the incident or anything like that.
Okay. Now, you mentioned Officer Wharton, you spoke with him briefly. Did you talk with any of the other officers, or did you overhear any comments that were made regarding what might have happened?
I did not. I was trying to get a bit more information, specifically, you know, when I was asking, like, how many shots were fired.
Yeah.
And then before I left, I asked Officer Huerta if any of the officers had been injured and if they needed any attention from us. And he said no and thanked me. The other officer was there. His name's on the tip of my tongue. I'll probably remember his name as soon as you and I hang up the phone. But there was an additional officer there. And so this part is highly speculative. My assumption was that you know, I kind of got the impression that Huerta had showed up second and that this other officer showed up first.
Okay.
So I don't know if that's the case or not, but it was Officer Huerta that I was dealing with primarily.
Okay. That's fair enough. And then you mentioned your report. Did you write a written report regarding this?
I did write down an email, not an email, but like a Microsoft Word document that I didn't publish or anything. I have it. But essentially, I usually have that kind of stuff available to me instantly, but I didn't anticipate being deployed out here to Victorville, so I'm sitting on a corner and can't access it at this time.
Is that something that we would be able to get access? Is that something, a normal thing that you would do, is write a report after that?
Not typically. I mean, I should say it's not typical that it would be something that is made public. For me, I just keep kind of a written record of events I know are going to probably develop into larger events.
Okay.
Just so that when people like you and I have conversations like this, I can recall the exact event details.
Okay.
So if you'd like, when I get access to that document, I can either call you back or, you know, see if there's anything else that I remember that slipped my mind, you know, as of this moment.
That would be great. And then is there an official report for AMR?
Yes. There's an it's an EPCR, and it's a patient care record. It was written by Medic 421, which is the ambulance.
Okay.
And so it has their record of the details for that call, and then it also has the names of everyone. I'm attached to that incident, so
okay.
I didn't do an independent EPCR. They completed it and just put my name on it along with them. So
and how would we go about, or how would I, if I wanted to access that? Who would I contact?
I can give you the number if you're ready for it.
Sure.
It's area code 805. Office manager.
Okay.
And we usually, I'm not sure, 100% sure what the process is. We're, you know, our company policy is to, you know, work with law enforcement agencies to get them anything they need.
Sure.
I'm not sure how that spells out, though. I don't know if that means that there needs to be a subpoena or just a request or how that works, but she's the guru on all that kind of stuff, and she'll be able to fill you in.
Okay,
so,
good deal. I will try to get a hold of her. And then, do you know, the only person I have not been able to get a message for, and I think that was him who was probably returning my call right now when I was first speaking with you. Is there a way for you to determine for sure if he would be working tomorrow?
I'm talking to, I've been trying to get in touch with my scheduler all day today myself, and she's not answering her phone. So she doesn't usually publish the schedule until the evening time.
Okay.
I
have a notation here from when I spoke with I think he said they would be working at the Main Street station again on Saturday.
Okay, I can tell you that trainee.
Okay.
So if it's highly likely working as well.
Okay.
I'm trying to pull up her information right now. I tell you what, I'm going to put you on speaker for a second just because I'm talking on my work phone and I need to open up an email to get her phone number.
Sure.
But was it her cell number that you were calling?
Calling.
Yeah, that's her.
Okay.
That's her.
I left a message for her, and then I called, and I think her voicemail may be full. So.
Oh, okay.
What I might do is just give you my cell number, and you could text me maybe if you determine whether or not she tomorrow.
Absolutely. Let me get into my notes here so I can write your number down. Sorry, one second.
Not a problem.
All right. 805, I assume?
805. And
all righty, sir. Well, I'll try and see. I'll make sure those three are on tomorrow, and then I will text you.
And I did get a, like I said, I didn't. I would just need to. It would be relatively quick, just like
okay
how long you and I spoke, and then
great.
I appreciate your time. If you think of anything else, you have my number, and you can give me a call back. And then if you review your notes that you had taken and there's something else that you recall that might be of interest to me, definitely let me know.
Yeah, those are the only things that really, you know, stood out to me other than, you know, and this is just my own personal speculation. You know, of course, anytime we respond to a call of that nature, you know, I try and figure out in my mind or try and paint a picture and see what might have happened and guess at what, you know, is going on. So I apologize. I tried to, when I was giving you this statement, you know, state when I thought something was just speculation versus what the facts were. So some of the things were just, you know, that I mentioned were speculation, and I made sure to say speculation before that, though. Okay. So,
good deal.
Yeah.
Appreciate your time, and hope you have a quiet and safe shift. And
thanks, I appreciate it.
I will. If you get that information, definitely please text me, and then I'll try to arrange to meet with them tomorrow.
Sounds good, and I'll text you very soon, and then otherwise enjoy your training.
Okay. Thanks a lot. I appreciate it.
All right, have a good day.
You too. Thanks.
Bye. Bye.